Hello and welcome to the Illinois Radio Reader. I'm Janelle Eckerman and today I'll be reading selections from the News Gazette for Friday, March 13, 2026. And from the front page, the main article is Close Encounter. Champaign-Urbana visit has Gorville players hungry for more, and the article is written by Rob Locates. Champaign. Starstruck was the word on Gorville's basketball player Zach Green's mind when taking all of Champaign-Urbana in for the first time. Sure, Green said, he and some of his teammates from the southern Illinois village of 1,236 had driven through the area before, but none had ever stopped. It's a big city for us, obviously, but I enjoy it, and it's kind of homey, he said. The biggest towns we might have 15,000 to 17,000 people, so coming into this place, you kind of expect it to be like Chicago or other big cities, but it's not. It feels more like a town that we have come back home, especially at State Farm Center, and the article is then continued onto page A12. We've seen it on pictures, seen it on video, but walking out of that tunnel to be able to see it all, the stands go all the way up and to hear the roar of the fans, he said. It's no better feeling than that. Teammate Lincoln Turley couldn't agree more. There's nothing just like playing in State Farm Center, he said. This is such a nice town, meeting people and all that. It's seriously a dream. The Black Cats prevailed over Lawrenceville High School 55-47 in Thursday afternoon's Class 1A semi-final, setting up a title match with Chicago Manual at 10 a.m. Saturday. This is the team's third appearance in the IHSA Boys Basketball Tournament. Its first was in 2018. Green and the travel party of 45 players, coaches, cheerleaders and administrators arrived in town Wednesday afternoon and will leave after Saturday's championship game. The added expense of remaining in town for 4 days isn't a worry at all, said Superintendent John Green. Any experience like this for kids, even the adults, is a memory they'll keep for a lifetime, he said. Green said a number of fans decided to stay in the area through Saturday. Others, including two fan buses filled with 60 students, returned to Gorville on Thursday afternoon and will make the 3-hour, 5-minute trip back to State Farm Center on Saturday morning. The teams enjoyed monocles on Thursday night. On Friday, it's back to business. After attending the Class 3A semifinals, Gorville will practice, study game film and pore over scouting reports. Saturday morning's routing. Breakfast at 7, police escort to the arena at 8:30, game at 10, will mimic Thursdays. Before arriving in Champaign-Urbana, they made a pit stop at Arcola High School to practice. Afterwards, they stopped by Biagi's Ristorante Italiano in Champaign, and between the pizza, fried ravioli and some of the best chicken Alfredo Turley's ever eaten, it emerged as the favourite so far. Turley, whose favourite team is the Illini, said he got to speak to a waiter who served star junior guard Andrej Stojakovic not long ago. A big fan-out moment for the senior, who had never set foot in Champaign-Urbana before. After a belly full of Biagi's, he's ready for more. The food is really calling out my name, so I'm ready to find out and explore more of Champaign, he said. Ahead of the final, the team took note of their dedicated fan base, one of the reasons they attributed to their success. It's like every game that we have, the entire town of Gorville will show up, Turley said. I think our basketball team is definitely the label of our town. Our fans will do anything for us. They'll show up to any of the games for us, even if it means travelling 3 hours through a boring ride. Teammate Garrett Church is looking forward to watching some of today's games and squeezing in practice. They're going to be fun to watch and we're excited for that, he said. We are up here for basketball first, he said. Today is going to be our fun day, but then we will get back into business mode. And speaking of business, Experian Champaign-Urbana estimated around 34,000 people will go through the turnstiles at State Farm Center throughout the IHSA tournament. And with this article, there are several photos, and the main two photos are from the front page. And the main photo is captioned, "Unity senior forward Dane Eisenmenger falls to his knees after the final buzzer following his team's 62-57 loss to Peoria Manual in Thursday afternoon's Class 2A state semi-final game at State Farm Center in Champaign." And the second photo is captioned, "The Gorville travel party of around 45 players, coaches, cheerleaders and administrators sits down for a post-victory." And that photo was courtesy of Rob Locates from the News Gazette. And the main photo was courtesy of Robin Schultz from the News Gazette. And from page A12, the remaining photo is captioned, "Members of the Gorville Black Hats leave their bus to eat a late lunch at Buffalo Wild Wings in Savoy after an IHSA tournament win over Lawrenceville on Thursday afternoon." And that photo was also courtesy of Rob Locates from the News Gazette. And moving along to the next article from the front page, it's from University of Illinois, and the title is "State Lawmaker, Restore Memorial Stadium's Name," and it's written by Yana Wiesema, Springfield. A state legislator and University of Illinois alum is putting together a joint resolution to implore the Board of Trustees to reconsider the name of Geese Memorial Stadium, which he says is more than simply an athletic facility. "There's a higher reason that that building exists than to be a football field or to be a venue for concerts or whatever," said State Rep Steve Reek, Woodstock, who graduated from the UI in 1975. "It's there as a permanent memorial." Reek recently got a draft of the resolution back from the Legislative Reference Bureau. He said the document will go through some revisions and he expects to submit it sometime after legislators return from Easter in early April. The article is then continued onto page A12. "It's a statement of the conscience of the General Assembly more than it is a bill that says this will be done, because it's not really within the General Assembly's portfolio to do this kind of thing," he said. "It has to come from the Board of Trustees of the University of Illinois." The stadium, which celebrated its centennial in 2024, was originally dedicated to the 189 students and alumni who died in World War I, according to UI officials. The names of these individuals are inscribed on limestone columns along the top of the stadium. The memorial was later expanded to include those who died in subsequent wars and conflicts. The names of these 948 alumni, students, faculty and staff are engraved on limestone tablets at the entrances to the east and west colonnades. The UI's Division of Intercollegiate Athletics announced in September 2025 that the facility would become Geese Memorial Stadium following a $100 million gift from alumnus and philanthropist Larry Geese. The change is both in recognition of Geese's gift, the largest in DIA history, and his late father, Larry Geese Sr. Geese said he was making the donation in memory of his dad, an Army veteran. "I am proud that my family, most notably my father, himself a veteran of the United States Army, is now associated with this critically important memorial, and I am glad that my support can ensure that the Memorial Stadium name and, more importantly, the facility's timeless purpose will be protected and amplified during the stadium's next 100 years," he said in a previous statement to the News Gazette. "By forming this partnership with the university, we have ensured that the stadium continues to be a place where the sacrifices of our nation's fallen soldiers will never be forgotten." DIA officials said in October that the university has the utmost respect and association for the history and purpose of our stadium. Feelings shared by Illinois alumnus Larry Geese, who has chosen to invest in protecting and amplifying the stadium's proud legacy for generations to come. Rieke previously shared his concerns about the change in a letter to the UI's Board of Trustees, as well as during the time for public comment at the board's January meeting. "I take issue with the board's decision to rename Memorial Stadium to acknowledge a financial gift, no matter how well-intentioned," he wrote in the letter. "In no way am I questioning Mr. Geese's sincerity as to his words about his father or anyone who wore the uniform in defence of our liberty. We owe them too much for that. I do feel, however, that Memorial Stadium stands for something that should not be altered for the sake of sponsorship and that the board's action was inappropriate." Rieke told the News Gazette that he is not putting any kind of umbrage on Geese, but believes the university and Geese could find some more appropriate way to acknowledge his most generous gift. Larry Geese gave the university $100 million, but these guys gave something much more, he said. In the springtime of their lives, they gave everything. And the main photo with this article is captioned, "The columns of what is now Geese Memorial Stadium bear the names of 189 University of Illinois students and alumni who died in World War I." And that photo was courtesy of Robin Schultz from the News Gazette. And my apologies for any mispronunciations. And moving on to page A2 in today's reading of the News Gazette, in corrections. "The News Gazette strives to present fair and accurate reporting and to correct any errors as promptly as possible. Corrections and clarifications for all sections run on this page. To report an error, please call 217 351 5252, then press 6 to reach the newsroom." And in Daybook, top of the morning, "Something to get you going today," courtesy of staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with, "On Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favourite bartender by emailing ltaylor@newsgazette.com. Donna Cartwright has worked in the food industry for 42 years, but she sure hasn't forgotten her first time bartending. "I soon got thrown into bartending when my owner, co-worker, took a road trip mid-shift," she said. "It was just her and around 80 customers at the bar where she was working in South Padre Island, Texas, though she's originally from Homer. I had to wing it, as I've never made a drink in my life before that night." Cartwright returned to Illinois in 2013, following her daughter when she joined the Navy and was stationed at the Great Lakes. "Coming back to Illinois was an eye-opener," she said. "It was tough getting a job in the industry with me being older and an unknown." Even so, she found work at the Danville County Club, Ogden's Pink House, the Sydney Saloon, Oakwood's Pit Stop, Urbana's Blackjack 2, and now back to the Sydney Saloon. She says it's a great place for food, drinks, and entertainment, including karaoke, music bingo and trivia, and all in a friendly atmosphere. "You may come in as a stranger, but you're going to leave as a friend," Cartwright said. Cartwright likes making a Long Island iced tea enough that at least one co-worker calls it Donna Tea, and old fashions are another favourite to serve. On the rare occasion she drinks, she's going for something simple like a Michael Bob Ultra or a Tito's and soda. "I'm very family-oriented, so when I'm not pouring cold drinks and serving hot food at the Sydney Saloon, I'm spending time with my daughter at the gym and hanging out with my grandbabies, Audrey and Owen," Cartwright said. And from the same page, some area history. In 1926, Lincoln biographer and Methodist pastor John Wesley Hill, Chancellor of Lincoln Memorial University in Harrogate, Tennessee, spoke at the Urbana-Lincoln Hotel after visiting the Champaign County Courthouse to search for documentation of Abraham Lincoln's activities as a lawyer here. Although there are old settlers still alive who can recall cases that Lincoln handled in local courts, Hill could not find a scratch of a quill to prove that fact. He determined that the records must have been stolen. and in 1976, the wait is nearly over as Marketplace Mall will open 450,000 of its 500,000 square feet next Wednesday. Sears opened in October, and Bergner's department store will open along with the rest of the mall's stores. Nearly 40% of the stores at Marketplace are locally owned and operated, with another 10% of the retail space reserved for additional local merchants. And in 2011, March isn't a pretty time of year for cemeteries. The ground over some graves may settle, and when driven over recently thawed ground, tractors easily sink into the mud. However, at Grandview Memorial Gardens, where Barbara and Morris Huck Otterbury are buried, their grandchildren say the problems with upkeep have been going on longer than these recent soggy weeks. Guy Saxton, Grandview's president, said this winter has been a wet one, and maintenance crews have been overwhelmed with issues such as grave settling. And in international history, today's highlight. On March 13, 2013, Jorge Bergoglio of Argentina was elected Pope, choosing the papal name Francis. He was the first pontiff from the Americas and the first from outside Europe since Pope Gregory III's death in the year 741. Pope Francis died on April 21, 2025. And on this date in 1781, the seventh planet of the solar system, Uranus, was discovered by astronomer William Herschel. And in 1925, the Tennessee General Assembly approved the Butler Act, which prohibited public schools from teaching the theory of evolution. Governor Austin Peay signed the measure on March 21. The bill was challenged in court later that year in the famous Scopes Monkey trial. Tennessee ultimately repealed the law in 1967. I'll now move on to page A5 in Our Communities, and the first article is Dr. G's Brainworks, puzzle store to close in April. Owner was unable to find a buyer, and it's written by Yana Wiesema. Champagne. A local business is shutting its doors after a little over 12 years of teasing brains, peddling puzzles, and combining entertainment with education. April 30 will mark the final day of business for Dr. G's Brainworks unless inventory sells out before then. The family-run business said that this is a very difficult decision that comes with mixed emotions. As we announced in early December, after 7 years, it's time for our family to focus on other priorities, said owner John Dimmitt III. While we received some inquiries from potential new owners, unfortunately, none came to fruition. Dimmitt previously said that he was looking for someone to buy the business so that he could focus on his full-time position at Parkland College, where he is a technical support specialist. A going-out-of-business sale will begin Wednesday, and Dr. G's Brainworks will accept gift cards and certificates as long as we have reasonable inventory, the business said. The store, which is located at Marketplace Shopping Centre, has been voted the number one educational game store in the News Gazette's People's Choice Awards 3 years in a row. Dr. G's Brainworks was founded by psychologist and gerontologist Dr. William Gingold. The business initially opened at Urbana's Lincoln Square Mall in late 2013, and the Champagne Mall location opened the following year. Dimmitt has been with the business from the start and became its owner in 2019. We are so proud of our incredible staff and could not be more grateful to the community for your tremendous support, he said. It has been an honour to carry on the important mission of cognitive health that Dr. Gingold began in 2013. We have loved being able to bring people together through creativity, learning, education, and fun. And the photo with this article is captioned, from left, John Dimmitt Jr., John Dimmitt III and Angie Dimmitt stand inside their business, Dr. G's Brainworks, at Champagne's Marketplace Shopping Centre. The store is scheduled to close by April 30, and that photo was courtesy of Robin Schultz from the News Gazette. And the next article is from page A6, Senate Energy and Public Utilities Committee. bill regulates loud commercials on streaming services, and it's written by Nicole Hytrek and UIS Public Affairs Reporting, Springfield. A bill that would prevent streaming services from running commercials at a higher volume than the shows and movies people are watching passed through the Senate Energy and Public Utilities Committee on Thursday. Senate Bill 3222, sponsored by State Senator Doris Turner, D. Springfield, would allow Illinoisans to lodge official complaints over commercial volume if they're substantially louder than the programs they accompany. This is really important because it really does affect people's quality of life, Turner said. And I think that we have a responsibility to, you know, to look at those kinds of things and do what we can. Turner said constituents with young children who nap during the day and people who have hearing disabilities have complained about watching movies or TV on streaming services such as Netflix and Hulu, only to be interrupted by commercials that are noticeably louder. Turner said the ubiquity of streaming services makes this legislation a timely, needed update to existing regulations. I think that this is a good time, just because that's kind of the trend of the way that people are watching. Movies and TV shows and all of that is basically on streaming services, she said. Commercial volume for TV stations, cable and satellite TV is already regulated at the federal level with the 2010 Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation, or CALM Act, but those regulations don't include streaming services. Those rules are set and enforced by the Federal Communications Commission, which uses consumer complaints to assess where and when rules are broken. Turner's bill has a similar enforcement mechanism, but she said she will introduce an amendment to clarify whether the Illinois Commerce Commission or the Illinois Attorney General's Office will receive complaints and enforce the volume rule. State Senator Mick Halpin, D. Rock Island, introduced a similar bill with a different enforcement structure, and he said he's happy to join forces with Turner to regulate commercial volume on streaming services. It's frustrating for me, and I'm not someone that has a hearing disability or has to worry about a young child taking a nap during the day, he said. But constituents do have those issues and express significant support for this bill. The bill now goes to the Senate floor. And the next article is also from page A6, and it is Illinois State Board of Elections. Officials say state mostly insulated from Trump's threats. Federal rhetoric about intervention hasn't translated into concrete action, they say, and it's written by Reese Dower and Medill Illinois News Bureau. Election 2026. Springfield. Illinois election officials and community leaders say they are confident the state is mostly insulated from the Trump administration's aggressive moves and heated rhetoric on election administration as Illinois' March 17 primary approaches. Republican county clerks cautioned, however, that while they weren't fazed by President Donald Trump's messaging or proposed changes to voting laws, they are concerned about how federal cuts to cybersecurity initiatives could affect future elections in the state. Last month, Trump suggested Republicans should nationalize elections and take over the voting in select unspecified places, despite the Constitution's express delegation of election administration to the states. In January, the FBI seized hundreds of boxes of 2020 election ballots in Georgia's Fulton County, and more recently issued a subpoena to Arizona for its voting results, after Trump's repeatedly debunked claims of widespread voter fraud in those swing states. The Trump administration also made major cuts last year to the cybersecurity agency responsible for bolstering state election security. Critics warn these moves are a signal the administration may look to expand its use of aggressive tactics to counter potential Republican losses in the midterms, but many Illinois election officials push back on the notion of a looming federal intervention or a fundamental rupture between local and federal officials. There is a lot of talk, said Sangamon County Clerk Don Gray, a Republican, but until I see the federal government take concrete action, there's no sense in stirring up people's fears or cynicism. Feds at polling places? Some in Trump's orbit have even stoked fears of federal immigration authorities being deployed to polling locations. A worry DuPage County Clerk Jean Kaczmarek sought to address in a press conference last week. It is a federal crime for the military or federal agents to interfere in elections or intimidate voters, she said. Those crimes will not be tolerated in DuPage County. In an interview, Kaczmarek, a Democrat, said she was only addressing concerns that were already circulating. On Tuesday, the Democratic National Committee sued the Trump administration to compel a response to whether the government was planning to deploy agents or troops to the polls. The Department of Homeland Security has denied that its Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents would be dispatched to polling places around the country in the midterms. Late last month, the FBI led a call with state election officials from across the country, including Illinois, to discuss the upcoming election. During the call, federal officials reportedly tried to assuage concerns of the prospect of a federal presence at voting locations. Some participants in the call asked about potential federal presence and increased involvement in the 2026 elections. Matt Dietrich, spokesman for the Illinois State Board of Elections, told Capital News Illinois. The response from the participating agencies indicated no such plans. Gray, the Sangamon County Clerk, said election officials should be careful making public projections about election interference without evidence of concrete action to back them up. He argued such talk can undermine public trust in elections and noted he had received no indication federal officials were planning any sort of election intervention. We need to see definitive action before getting people riled up, he said. Another element of the shifting relationship between local elections officials and the federal government is the cuts to federal programs designed to bolster election cybersecurity of states. Over the past year, the Trump administration has inflicted deep cuts to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, the federal entity charged with providing cybersecurity support to the states, among other missions. While states are responsible for running elections, the federal government has long lent its cyber capabilities to help secure them. I'll now take a short break and return with part two of today's reading of selections from the News Gazette for Friday, March 13, 2026, read by Janelle Eckerman. Please stay tuned.